Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
First trip to Pensacola as the Chief of Naval Operations, and what a beautiful day to be here. Just got done with an all-hands call to about 1,000 of our sailors and Marines. Of course, the cradle of naval aviation here, and our training command is here as well. So many sailors go through this area, so it's a real great opportunity for me. I look forward to your questions.
We had Admiral Cottle here yesterday, Darryl Cottle. He's the Chief of Naval Operations. This means he's the highest ranking officer in the Navy, reports to the Secretary of the Navy, he is a member of the Joint Chiefs, if that helps you think about his role in our nation's military. So a 4-star here at the base yesterday, meeting the troops, talking to them, talking to media afterwards, and answering questions about things like, are we going to be shifting missions, losing missions, consolidating missions, growing, diminishing? What do you think about NES Pensacola?
Not aware of anything that I'm working on to do any kind of consolidation. We are always looking for opportunity for, in our military construction processes, for facilities that need to be demolished or torn down or don't meet code or standards any longer, to go divest in those, because I have to support those, and they're on our books, if you will. But I wouldn't look at that as any kind of consolidation efforts.
Yeah, I wish the question had been asked a little bit more pointedly, but, you get what you get. And I couldn't go because it was scheduled for, right when the show was on, so I wasn't able to be there and ask questions personally. Asked about the fitness changes. I think I mentioned this to you the other day, that the Navy has now gone to a twice-a-year physical fitness certification as opposed to a once-a-year physical fitness certification, and he says, I'm totally behind that.
100% behind it. We went to one physical fitness test per year post-COVID. We needed to get back to two. And the Navy has really never had a combat fitness test for those rates and professions that are in combat arms specialties. And so we now have that in place as well. And when you couple that together with the work I'm doing with improving galleys and nutrition and just really making total sailor fitness across mind, body, and spirit, this is just one dimension of that. So I want sailors to really recognize that these changes are what they need to do to invest in themselves so that they are ready for high-end warfare.
And an additional element of that, as Channel 3 reporting this morning, because they're also there, is, and I did not get to see his actual remarks to the troops, so I'll be honest, I'm not sure what he said there. This was in the Q&A afterwards with the press, that our own Chris Bryan was there from the afternoon show Pensacola Right Now. But I think in his comments to the troops, one of the things that he said was that their physical fitness training, he thought of that as being something that should be done on sort of work time as opposed to on private time, that your need to stay in physical shape was something that you shouldn't have to be doing with your private work time. It should be something that should be done during your on-the-job time, which, there's an element of that that makes some sense. And certainly the idea of the modern generations believing the kind of work-life balance. He also talked about the importance of not having sailors live on the ships and having their own place to go when they come back to port. And there's about 10,000 sailors when he started that had that, that lived on the ship, and he's gotten about 4,000 of them off the ship, which I thought was kind of an interesting note about, again, trying to create a work-life balance instead of the military being just, something you're doing 24 hours a day. There are going to be times when that might be the case, but then when you, or 365 days, however you want to think about it, but when you come back to port, you got to come back to port and move off the ship.
We had mentioned that no sailor will live afloat.
Yeah, so when I came in as CNO, we had something between 8,000 to 10,000 sailors still living on ships. Now, this is a thing for only surface sailors. Submariners, they don't live on their submarines. Marines, they don't live in some pup tent somewhere. Aviators don't live in this hangar, right? But in our surface Navy, young sailors were still, you know, this is kind of E1, E2, E3, were still living on ships, okay, if they were single. And I personally believe in today's world, you should work and live in two different places. I think to have the privacy to actually have a relationship with, you know, with your friends and with a girlfriend or a boyfriend, to actually have a place to go relax off the ship is a requirement. It's not just a necessity. It is a requirement.
And one of the things, you know, I don't have a lot of knowledge about this, but I've read at different times that one of the issues you have with mental health with some of the sailors is that when a ship comes back to port and then there are repairs to be done on the ship, that that's a very loud process, that that's a very, you know, it's a harsh audio environment, so to speak. And that's actually one of the things that sort of, you know, really interferes with them being able to relax and to be happy, because if they're living on the ship. And I'll be honest, I'd never quite put that together, because I always just assumed, as somebody who's never been in the Navy, I just always assumed that everybody in the Navy had an apartment or a barracks or something off the ship. And it just always seemed like a description to say that, well, what do you mean they're in the shipyard? You know, when the destroyer or the carrier is being worked on. Okay, well, now I understand. And now it makes sense, because if you come back to port and home to port, not just to, you know, port in some foreign nation, but you come back home to, you know, like Norfolk or something, or Jacksonville, and you're like, and you never get to leave the ship. Not, I mean, you can go off, but then you have to come back on the, I mean, I get it. I get why that would be an issue for a lot of folks. And again, I apologize. I hadn't understood that till he said it yesterday.
Imagine we ask sailors to do 7, 8, 9 month deployments on aircraft carriers and destroyers, and they pull back into Norfolk or Mayport or San Diego, and that night, you know where they get to go sleep? On the same place they've been for the last 9 months. To me, that's just unsatisfactory. So I took this initiative on to get sailors off the ships.
And of course, that's going to mean, you know, helping them with the ability to live on shore, because, you know, it's a cost, right, to have an apartment that you don't live in all the time.
Now, we're already a bit oversubscribed with our unaccompanied housing, our barracks, our dormitories already. So how am I going to pull this off? Well, you're not going to be able to do that unless we have kind of a system where more senior folks that are in the barracks today are given BAH, our basic allowance for housing, and move them into the community so that younger sailors can take their place in the barracks. So Congress was right on board with this, gave the Navy the authority to give BAH to E4s and below. We're leveraging that authority. And then making sure I have the budget line to, you know, to make good on that is something I work on very hard, so that we can actually get young sailors off ships into housing and get the more senior sailors into apartments and other places in town. It's worked very well. So since I've taken this on, I've moved about 4,000 sailors off ships, and I got about 6,000 more to go. And so I'm on plan for that.
Which, again, sounds to me like a very good idea. It makes sense to me, especially kind of dovetails with a lot of the things that we're reading about today's generation, where they want a work-life balance. And you say, well, they're in the military. Okay, agreed. But do you want them to be happy in the military? You know, do you or do you want them to feel like their entire life is given up for the time that they're in it? And I know some of the retired folks might well say, that's just what it is. Okay, but you still have to recruit from this population who have, a pretty well-entrenched idea that they need that balance or that, you know, mental health space. And I don't know that they're totally wrong, but if this is what it takes to help them feel, I mean, happy as being sailors and not hating the experience and not feeling stressed and, you know, sort of unhappy because of it, I'm fine. I mean, it's good. It sounds like what they're trying to do is create, what he's trying to do is to create an environment where the sailors are, you know, happier to be sailors. And tell me that that's not important from, you know, we actually have an agency titled morale. morale comes in a lot of different shapes and sizes. And, you know, making the sailors happy because they don't have to live on the ship sounds to me like a pretty important initiative. Also then, if you've got more sailors moving to land, when they're at least back, from deployment, that means that you're going to have more housing available. That's why the BAH is talking about that. But also, one of the challenges, one of the things that was raised was, what about the affordability challenge and the off-base price of housing challenge in Pensacola? But he says, not unique to you guys, it's kind of everywhere, and there's a reason. Again, one of these, I had never connected it to, but he says,
Fortunately, you know, I would say Pensacola area here is not cornered the market on that problem. It's a problem, and I think predominantly because where the Navy is, it's in pretty places. You know, so I tend to be in places people want to be. And of course, it tends to be near the water in general, a lot of the Navy, you know, by nature of what we do. And so because of that, you tend to see higher cost of living in general. And there's been a shortage of housing. This, I'm just telling you, this goes from Maine, the shipyard at Bath Iron Works, the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. It's certainly true in the Hampton Roads area. And just all down the eastern seaboard in Florida is not short on that as well. It is a problem I'm addressing.
John, what's the most expensive place to live, generally speaking?
Near the beach.
Near the beach, near the water. Where do naval bases tend to be?
Near water.
So where does off-base housing tend to be? In places where it's expensive. I mean, it kind of is obvious when you think about it. I don't mind admitting when I hadn't connected a dot, and he connected a dot, and I thought, oh, that actually makes sense. You know, if your beaches are expensive to live by, and naval bases are by beaches because, you know, naval bases. I mean, there are places that are not by the water. The NAF El Centro is, I mean, nowhere close to water. There are places, but, you know, a lot of them are, and so it makes kind of sense. So a lot of other stuff he talked about, including AI and shipbuilding and, you know, size of the Navy. We'll get to that a little bit later on in the show, but very interesting. It's the second time in a year. Oh man, I feel like my sense of time has gotten so distorted. I think that's right, because the commissioning of the ship, the amphibious landing dock that was here, Richard McCool, was with the CNO, and that was with Lisa Franchetti when she was the CNO, and she got fired by the Trump administration during the first year. It's just been such a long year that she got fired, last August or something like that, after the commissioning, before, obviously, Darrell Caudle took over. So, 521 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
As a mom, comforting my family is what I do best. Vicks VapoStick provides soothing, non-medicated Vicks Vapors in an easy-to-apply stick, and it dries fast, so there's no mess. I use it to comfort myself and my family.
Thanks, Mom.
Vicks VapoStick, soothing comfort for the whole family. And try Vicks VapoShower Max for steamy Vicks Vapors when you need more comfort for yourself. Use as directed.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive. How about a hobby that's fun and could make you money? Find out tomorrow morning at 10 with Emerald Coast Coins. Hear about precious metals and metal detectors as a great hobby. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold, silver, and the best metal detectors to find treasure. Get more information about this tomorrow morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Pizza's here.
Oh, great. I'd love some, but I'm worried about my stomach issues.
If you're worried about having diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools, it may not just be stomach issues. It could be a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk. Mornings at 9, right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. On News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Luxuriously appointed.
I always think it's a test of the uniqueness of someone's voice and or of the particular quote that I'm playing. If I can play you a one-second clip from Ricardo Montalban and you recognize the voice, that's pretty good.
And what about the commercial?
Right.
That's Chrysler, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, see, I remember that.
You know, the rich Corinthian leather is a little bit more famous as a line, but you immediately know what that commercial is.
Oh, yes.
That's right. 524 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, whatever day of the week it is. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Let's see. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Greenland is back in the headlines today. The White House is...
Please, no. Stop. This is... go on. Go on. Tell the story.
Well, the White House is not ruling out using...
Oh, no. They ruled it in.
Ruled it in.
Well, I mean...
That's a step above not ruling it out.
Caroline Leavitt, go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
All right. So White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said yesterday that gaining control of the territory is a national security priority and said that the administration is discussing options for acquiring it, including using military
force.
See?
It's ruled in. The quote, the president and his team are discussing a range of options to pursue this important foreign policy goal. And, of course, utilizing the U.S. military is always an option at the commander-in-chief's disposal. Just, you know, why can we do one thing well and then leave it alone?
What, the Florida?
You cannot attack a NATO member state. Period. Okay, I'll just say it. If we use military action against Greenland, he should be impeached. Period. I mean, that's it. We're done. And if it's impeachable to do the thing, it's clearly wrong to even threaten, menace, mention, include the thing. All right, David, go ahead. Whatever you want to do. That story is insane to me. Go on.
All right. Well,
and Mike Johnson even. Well, you know, I don't think it's a good idea. Okay, well, that's a start. Somebody saying no. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, the Pentagon now says it is executing a review of women in ground combat roles. The review announced Tuesday is meant to determine their effectiveness. This is 10 years after the Defense Department lifted restrictions against women serving in combat roles.
You know, this is actually one of the interesting things about this. How many women are actually serving in what you might call frontline ordinary combat roles? If you had to take a stab at it, how many?
Oh, boy. I don't think all that many.
Yeah, 3,800 in infantry, armor, and artillery. A teeny tiny little fraction of the U.S. Army. And there's 150 women have completed Ranger training. 10 have passed their Green Beret test. And the Marines have about 700. So between Army and Marines, you've got somewhere in the 4,500 vicinity, which is a tiny, tiny percentage of the overall force. But, you know, that it still, yes, this is ongoing. We'll see what happens.
Absolutely. And the head of the world's largest chip maker is calling robots AI immigrants.
Oh, I thought you were talking about, you know, potato chips because I got really hungry for a second. But all right. AI, go on. Go on.
I could see how that mistake could be made.
Chip manufacturer very clear, is not specific enough. And early in the morning when I haven't eaten in a while.
In this case, I'm referring to NVIDIA and CEO Jensen Huang, who spoke yesterday in Las Vegas. And he says that robots will be creating jobs by doing work on manufacturing floors that he says humans don't want to do anymore.
You know how a place that sells pools and pool supplies will also almost always sell pool tables and billiard supplies? It's just true. They tend to go together. They tend to sell both together. And I've always assumed that the reason was because people looking for pool tables will call pool supply companies by mistake and vice versa. And so I think that if you are a chip manufacturer who makes AI and technology, you should also make potato chips just to capture the branding overlap for your profit margin.
That's fair. That's fair. And, you know, that really could be a profitable strategy.
Yeah, I mean, you could have crunchy chips, and you could have, you know, thin chips, and you could have kettle chips, and that could all be ways of describing your
This is where we make our high-end video cards. This is where we make our Ripple chips.
Absolutely. Buy our new computing power. It's got ridges. All right, for grabbing all the sauce. All right, David, thank you so much for the update. 528, I know. You think, Andrew, you sounded so smart there for like 6 minutes, and then all of a sudden you started talking about this, and you sound so dumb. Okay, yeah, I mean, you know, it happens. We move all over the place. I try to keep you on your toes. E-Verify is a...
6 minutes? I was like, whoa.
Well, it was a long... it was a longer segment, but maybe not through the whole of it. That's fair enough.
Okay.
E-Verify for all is a bill that's been filed in Tallahassee. This right now, if you are... What is the number? I think it's 25... That if you have a business,
you know, we are
that
always
is,
looking for opportunity.
Can you turn him back in? Very much.
Thanks for
if you can turn, if you have a company that's got 25 or more workers, you have to use E-Verify. And of course, public employers also have to use E-Verify. That'd be your, you know, universities, your schools, your government, whatever, sheriff's department. But private employers under 25 workers are not required to use E-Verify, and this would make it for everybody. I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, if you're going to have the idea that people ought to be certified to work in the country before they can work in the country, then it ought to be for everybody. So I would expect this is going to pass overwhelmingly. Maybe you have some kind of a cost element that the small businesses would push back on. I don't know, you know, but that's one of the bills that's been filed. So, you know, we'll see how that one works its way through. Also, a bill to ban bump stocks. We have done the bump stock hokey pokey so many times, which is such a weird thing to me, because bump stocks, I had forgotten that bump stock, the ban came in as part of the post-Parkland bill. I had thought that it had come after that, but it had come in then, which, of course, the main time that that became part of the ordinary lexicon was after the Las Vegas attack, because that was the weapon that allowed him to kill so many people in Las Vegas. But, of course, the Supreme Court has struck down the ATF's ban on bump stocks, or the, you know, the regulation of it as an automatic weapon. And so it's back to being legal. That had to do with more of a technicality, I think. But anyway, Toby Overdorf has proposed this bill to make those legal again in Florida.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Crude oil prices lower this morning now that President Trump says he's tapping some of the oil reserves from Venezuela.
The president posting, I am pleased to announce that the interim authorities in Venezuela will be turning over between 30 and 50 million barrels of high-quality sanctioned oil to the United States of America.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson, the president says cash from the sale will be used to help the people of Venezuela and the U.S. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz says he's not stepping down.
I'm not going anywhere, and you can make all your requests for me to resign over my dead body. Will that happen?
But House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer will claim the state's leader was asleep at the wheel while the alleged multi-billion dollar fraud took place under his watch. Comer is set to say that in his opening statement at a House hearing at 10 a.m. Eastern. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. We've got partly cloudy skies. It's 63 degrees right now in Pensacola. We'll get to our forecast here in just a few minutes. Well, in a military community, there's always some concern about consolidation at installations like NAS Pensacola, but the Navy's top officer with some reassuring news yesterday.
I do think it's built for stability and growth. I'm not aware of anything that I'm working on to do any kind of consolidation.
Admiral Daryl Cottle there, and he says the Navy's always looking to get rid of outdated facilities, but newer facilities will likely be built to replace any aging infrastructure at NAS Pensacola. Those comments coming after he held an all-call to address the troops at NAS Pensacola yesterday. Well, Santa Rosa County Commission meeting regulars pushing back a little bit on that shift to Tuesdays for committee meetings. Resident Sherry Chapman, she attends just about every Santa Rosa County Board of Commissioners meeting. She says this new schedule is creating problems for her volunteer schedule.
Today, I have an appointment that I have to leave for that's been scheduled for a year because I know that our meetings are on Monday. This is not conducive to those of us that do come and participate in our government.
And Chapman making those comments yesterday at the Santa Rosa committee meeting. And she says commissioners need to remember citizens are the backbone of county government. She wants the board to move those meetings back to Mondays. County commissioners did recently approve moving the committee meetings to Tuesdays and shifting agenda publication schedule from Fridays to Wednesdays in order to make things a little easier for both the commissioners and the county staff. Governor Ron DeSantis says he could add to Nicolas Maduro's legal problems. The governor yesterday saying he's planning on pursuing state charges against the former Venezuelan president. He said Maduro was involved in bringing drugs to Florida, and he would also empty his prisons and send inmates to the U.S. The governor says importing criminal elements is a very hostile act. Well, a Miami-Dade County judge ruled that a jury will hear then-13-year-old Derek Rose's 911 call and taped confession to police shortly after his mother was repeatedly stabbed in her bed just feet from her newborn. The defense argued it should be withheld since a doctor diagnosed him with ADHD and autism.
But I do not find an opinion from her with any scientific reliability when it comes to any assertion that the defendant's autism played a part in his ability to understand, comprehend, and waive his Miranda warnings.
Judge Richard Hirsch, he also agreed that officers did take care when dealing with Rosa and ended the interview when the teen asked. 534 here, News Radio, 92.3, right now 63 degrees. We've got partly cloudy skies. And our next news at 6 o'clock, we've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Elon Musk's AI chatbot, Grok, is facing backlash from governments around the world after a recent surge in sexualized images of women and children generated without consent. Britain's top technology official demanded that Musk's social media platform X take urgent action, while a Polish lawmaker cited it as a reason to enact digital safety laws. Some online businesses are rebuking Amazon for listing their products on its site without their permission. Amazon has been testing a program called Shop Direct that allows consumers to buy products sold on other retailers' websites. A Buy For Me button featured on some items uses AI to purchase products on a customer's behalf. NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang said the company is seeing very high customer demand in China for its H200 AI chips. Huang added that NVIDIA has started producing the chips again and is working out the final details about export licenses with the U.S. government. Futures are currently mixed. That's Your Money Now.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru. The men and women here at Anderson Subaru are committed to the Subaru Love Promise, a promise between us and our communities, a promise to make the Gulf Coast a better place to live, to work, and to play. And we're proud of what we've accomplished. From our ongoing support of the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association and Ascension Sacred Heart to volunteering with Feeding the Gulf Coast, we've conducted clothing drives for Loaves and Fishes and charity auctions for Gulf Coast Kids House, and we support Sherwood Elementary School in multiple ways. We're committed to the pets in our communities, too, by supporting dog adoption events with Phoenix Rising Rescue, Barktoberfest with Pensacola Humane Society, and Potty Gras with Wolfgang Park and Brews. And the love continues. Through donations, volunteering, and monetary support, Anderson Subaru is making a difference in the lives of our neighbors and our community. The Subaru Love Promise. That's a promise we intend to keep at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
There are a lot of questions about roof replacement in the news lately, such as insurance companies demanding replacement before they cancel coverage to companies not doing the job that they sold to you. Make sure you tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 9:30 as Quality Roofing Solutions will answer your questions. Find out what makes Quality Roofing Solutions the premier contractor in Florida tomorrow at 9:30.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Good to have you with us today. Joining me here in studio, I have Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, Happy New Year. Welcome back, sir. Is this mic on? Hold on. There you go. Right one. Yeah. All right. How about now?
You know what they were getting on to me because of this mic or before we come on the air, and then y'all messed it up.
Don't put me in this group. I didn't push the wrong button.
That's what you get. Yeah.
John, you had one job.
Oh, he has more than one job.
I know. So without using the word that starts with a Q, let's just say that over the last week, things have been safe.
We had a safe holiday. And really, when we look at the statistics, we had a relatively safe 2025.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that in a second. First thing, New Year's, no problems, no big incidents. Typically when you come in here, we've got minimum two or three kind of, major news incidents involving the sheriff's office. this week there just has not been. And I take it. That makes me excited. So, but nothing for New Year's, anything?
No, we were talking yesterday. We had a couple of disturbances, but nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing you would expect on a New Year's Eve. You know, the hope there is that people heeded our cautions.
Good.
And were very careful with regards to fireworks and regards to drinking and driving and that sort of thing.
They heeded your conversation and they avoided heated conversations?
Yeah, yeah. See, this is why we can't have nice things.
This is why the listeners pay the big bucks for this free service on the radio.
All over town, people are rolling their eyes at you. Which they do a lot, by the way.
I believe it.
I can tell them.
Over here. Yes, that's whenever, you know, if I make a bad joke on the radio and just look at your neighbors, you'll find out everybody who's listening, you know, because they're all rolling their eyes too. Did you hear what he said? I can imagine people on Three Mile Bridge gesturing. Did you hear that?
Yeah, but it's no fun if you don't get a couple of good eye rolls.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's
no,
true.
No, we're getting back serious to business.
I love how now you're orchestrating the show. I love it. Go on. Get back on track. Producer Chip.
I'm de-escalating this nonsense.
Oh, nice.
No, the weekend in the holiday season, kind of weird because the holiday, Christmas and New Year's was on a Thursday.
So yeah, it was an odd day to recover.
Then back in the weekend, and now we're back to normal. So,
but 2025, I mean, good results overall. Well, you know, relatively safe year compared to some of the norms.
Well, what you're looking for is trending downward, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
I think that's taking place nationally. And certainly here in Escambia County, we had like a 40% reduction in homicides, which is the number one things that people ask.
Right.
Some of that is luck. You know, some people get, if there were an individual getting shot, sometimes, unfortunately, they don't survive, and sometimes they do survive. So some of that is an element of luck. But I do think that there are...
In a county of 330,000 people, you know, what's a year for homicides?
We usually have around
40,
30, 30?
Okay.
35.
Okay, so that's one in 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's incredibly rare, but of course, for those people, it's pretty awful, and for their families.
Well, and to go into it, I mean, those numbers are set. Obviously, we know that. So we had 18 homicides, and we typically have 30 to 35.
Yeah, so that's a really better...
It was like a 40%, a little bit more than 40% reduction. In that homicide number. So why I have to look a little deeper. I look at, give me the numbers for the violent crimes, all violent crimes.
Right.
Because, you know, luck doesn't play as much of a role in that sort of thing. And we're down around 15%, 13 to 15% in all violent crimes. Again, that sample size is much larger. So
right.
you can pick a little bit more from those numbers.
And is that a one-year trend, a multi-year trend? What are you seeing?
That's year to year. But okay. So obviously you got to look at 2 years. And
right.
There's been a change in what we call NIBRS, the National Incident Reporting System, and also the state one. So you have to kind of look at 1 and 2 years. And so it is a trend downward on both those homicide numbers from where we were 2 years ago and certainly from last year as well. But we can't go too much farther because they changed the reporting system. And it's difficult. You can't, is it apples to oranges?
We went to Florida standards instead of, I mean, we changed the metric, and so it's
the
hard
way
to compare. Yeah.
And all, and these crimes are now in this system and that system. So you have to look at, again, apples to apples. So we'll look at last year, the report is going to show that 25 was a good year. And obviously, even compared to 24, we're trending lower.
Do you have any knowledge about how that is true for us and then true for like neighboring counties, you know, Baldwin, Santa Rosa, Okaloosa, and across the state? Are we part of a larger trend? Are we unique going down? You know, kind of, do you even know? I mean, you may not even know.
The last that I've heard was that everyone seems to be trending down. You're probably going to have some outliers where population's really gaining and things are changing. You know, there's some neighborhoods, there are cities, municipalities, there are counties that are changing the way they their future, basically, because of population increases and businesses. And, you know, if you get a large apartment complex moving into your jurisdiction, you're going to have, on average, more calls for service. It may not be violent crime, but they may be disturbances. They may be nuisance crimes or crimes against society is what they're termed now.
Yeah, I mean, people with less wealth living in much closer proximity to each other will provide incidents.
If you have a college in your area, you're going to have more of certain crimes.
There you go.
These things happen, and as we continue to gain population, we also our hope is that our two colleges, or we have three major colleges here in Escambia County, Pensacola State College and PCC and UWF, I think that they continue to want to bring more students in.
Yeah.
And by average, you're going to have a few more of those things. So we'll take it. We're going to take the downward trend. And I do believe that the state of Florida is trending downward. I think nationally things are trending downward. And again, we're going to take that. I don't know if that's people are aging out of the criminal business, or if it's technology, or if it's...
Do you have an explanation for the decline? Is it, as you say, criminals are aging out? Is it, kids are online instead of out and about causing trouble? There's less personal interactions because of social media. I mean, you tell me, what do you think?
I think it's a little bit of all of that. I think when you look at it, I think you can't discount the fact that that there's some changes that have taken place. There's technology, there's license plate readers, there's cameras, there's surveillance cameras. There's a lot of things that I think are playing into it. And I say that because we know that because some of the bad guys that we arrest and some of the information that we get are that, they can read your tag. So you have to do things differently. And we're pursuing stolen cars, as you guys are aware of.
Right.
So we can't do what we did before. They would steal a car, hide it, and then they go do a drive-by shooting. So they're changing a little bit. I'm not saying that doesn't happen at all because people do things in a sense of urgency. But I think that if you look at those types of things, it's changing their behavior. There's a reason why we don't have as many bank robberies as we used to, video cameras and bait money and all that sort of thing. I think that there's a greater chance of them getting caught. And so people don't rob as many banks as they used to. People, quite frankly, don't rob as many convenience stores as they used to. There's been some changes. And again, the way the money is stored, they don't have as much money in their thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that you can make some changes that will ultimately impact the level of crime.
I mean, my theory about having a locked car door or even a club, when I used to put a club on my car, was always, I know that won't stop a determined thief, but it will stop the casual thief who's looking for the easy access score. And if enough people are stopping the casual, they just make it, there's more friction involved in the endeavor, and it makes it harder for them to do the thing. And so they either do it differently or do it less or whatever. I do want to ask you, though, what is bait money?
Well, whenever you used to be that when you say, hey, give me all your money, and you give them a certain amount of money, and then when you pull it from that particular piece of the drawer, then it activates an alarm. Or it'll die, pack will go off whenever you open it up. Or there has been, I'm not telling any secrets, people should already know this, there are some money that in the middle of it, there's a tracker.
Okay.
And we were able to kind of track these. These things all really took place the last 20 or so, 25 years or so. And I think that all those things have made, if you're a real bank robber, then you know these things. You understand that you can't do what
they ever use fake money in the stack. Give them movie money instead, and then that would be something you could sort of track, sort of by use.
I would be surprised if the banks had a certain amount of movie money in their drawer.
It would seem like a kind of thing that they wouldn't want to have for the fear that it would get mingled in or something. But
yeah, exactly. You get the wrong money, and they're giving.
I don't know, I'm just thinking out loud. I'm not a professional banker. Yeah. I don't know, but
nor am I. And so I would not think that that's something that they've. I'm not aware of that tactic.
But in any case, the point is there's strategies that are used by the banks, and I had not heard that term before, bait money. That's why I asked. So
well, and what you'll see in some of the older 70s movies is they'll come in there and they'll rob a bank and Dog Day Afternoon or whatever they do, and then it's like, don't give me that bait money.
Oh, because all right, I got you.
Activate an alarm based on where it was in the drawer, or it is something that will blow up in their face.
What plans do you have for the year? What are you looking to do differently this year?
Well, I'm not the kind of guy that will say, okay, command staff, give me your five goals and objectives and how you're going to do them and all that stuff, because it's been my experience that people, and it's just my experience, so it's not necessarily what you'll probably hear in a lecture or a series of lectures, is that
how to win by not setting goals with Chip Simmons.
Goals are for losers. That's not necessarily what I'm saying.
You could start a whole anti-movement.
Well, why don't we just look at what we're doing, and if it's not working, let's not do that anymore. And if it is working, let's find a way to continue to make it better. So, and that's where I've always been, because if you tell a group of people to make a goal, they're going to make a goal that they can achieve. Mm-hmm. And if you really look at things, I think the sky's the limit. In my scenario, where just because you think we're good, can't we be excellent? Let's strive for excellence in everything that we do. And that's what we can do every day. We can do it that way. We don't have to say we've achieved that goal in March, so we're good for the rest of the year. No, let's continue to get better throughout the year.
How much of your changes that you make at the department or improvements are led by just the individual officer who's out there driving around, meeting people and talking to them and sees something you guys can do better. Because I always, my opinion is always that, you know, if you own a factory, the best way to learn how to run the factory better is to go talk to the guy who builds the widget.
Is the person doing the work.
Yeah, talk to them, because so much of the time the people at the top think they know better, and then they wind up imposing, you know, something that makes it worse on the people who actually have to do the job. And I know you don't do that. That's why I'm asking, how much of your, you know, how much freedom do your officers have to come to you or to, you know, Andy Hobbs or Tommy Leiter and say, you know, hey, this isn't working, or this would be better, this is a problem I have, you know, that kind of stuff.
We'll give you a quick example. You hire people in positions, or you elect people in positions based upon their experience, because you trust them to make some good decisions and use their experience. But to your point, you also have to understand what that impacts the worker, the Burkebees.
Right.
And so my experience has been a lot of narcotics investigations. So when we started looking at the connection between gun violence and drugs, I'm like, you know, let's increase our number of narcotics officers. So we made a big deal about it last year, about we doubled the size of our narcotics unit. We've broken records with regards to the amount of fentanyl and methamphetamine that we're seizing. And now we're starting to see, you know what, if we're seizing more drugs, we're stopping more cars for drugs, we're seizing more, taking more guns off the street.
You're pursuing stolen cars to prevent drive-bys.
All these things are kind of connected. So my point in saying all that is I used my experience as the value in which I know how to investigate a drug crime. And then I talk to the people that are doing the work and say, because things do change, and say, what if we did this? Imagine if we're doing great with this, can we double it? And will the rewards, you know, is it something that's scalable? And I think that those have proven to be fruitful in the last year. So we're going to continue. That's the thing we're going to look at. Do we, you know, I can't continue to double the size of this. I still have to concentrate on answering calls for service, which is what we're going to do this year. The Board of County Commissioners has approved 8 more deputy positions in October. Now we're working on getting them on the street so that when someone calls 911, we'll have a deputy closer.
I failed to ask you at the right time in this interview, but we were talking about the bank robbery and all that kind of stuff. Did you guys handle the armored car money blowing out into the street on Fairfield at the Wells Fargo?
Handling it is strong. We did take a report that they did notify us. As I understand it, money blew out the back of an armored truck, and they're doing
happens all the time. Unsecured bag, money gust, you know. It doesn't seem like a common thing.
Well, you know, we're always skeptical, so we always take a look at that. But there's
must've
no
been
crime.
That bait money.
There doesn't seem to be a crime that occurred. Yeah, you and your Monopoly money. We can't. I don't believe that was the case. I think that, as I understand
money,
it, this is real money, and it's in the thousands.
As far as you know, nobody got prosecuted for pocketing any?
Well, no. There were some people. There were some good Samaritans that actually returned the money, and my hope is that all the money was returned. I don't know, because I think they're still doing some internal checks on how much money was supposed to be in a bag and how much is returned. So I think that we did do a report, but again, there does not appear to be any criminal intent at this point. But we are working with the company itself to figure out what their claim is going to be.
All right, very good. Any final thoughts for us? Anything you want people to do other than, you know, drive safely in the street clouds that are still there in the tree-lined areas where it hasn't burned off yet, the fog this morning?
That's obviously important. I think you'll read in the news a lot of traffic accidents, and we want people to obviously slow down, and we encourage them to drive safer. Other than that, Escambia County has never been as safe as they are now, and we have never been as capable as we are today. So we're going to continue to do better and work harder.
Very good. Sheriff Chip Simmons, as always, thank you for what you do. Leading the community, thanks for, you know, being with us all the time, giving us good information, enduring my bad jokes. I always appreciate that.
You bet. Y'all take care.
By the way, I think I misspoke there. I meant to say dad jokes, not bad jokes. Obviously, they're high quality.
The highest. Okay.
5:53 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, you want a good realtor who's going to help you get not just a good price, but help fit your needs, be happy with it when you're all done, and get you all the way through to closing. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they close on average right around 4 homes every single week. During the height of the market a couple of years ago, they were well over 200 homes sold. Then 3 years ago, they had declined a little bit because the market was harder, 175, then a little bit more, 165 in 2024. But in last year, 209. So they jumped right back up last year, 30% up in a down year when people are struggling to sell homes. Why? Details, skill, knowledge, habit, all the things, you know, solving problems other people can't solve, finding the price to sell a home at that other people can't figure out. You know, sometimes it's raising the price. I mean, honestly, she was telling me about a home that, you know, one realtor told her, you know, it's, I think it was $399 or $499, and she's like, yeah, and it won't be higher than that. And she's like, I can get $625, and she did right away. Like, okay, you just, sometimes you got to know. And the point is, when you want your home sold, you want to buy a home, you want to make sure that people get you all the way through to the end with the deal done and you inhabiting the house. That's the key. 80% of a closing is just a waste of time, right? So give her a call and find out what makes her different. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty.
Princeton Grove, a new affordable housing community in Crestview, is now taking applications for one and two bedroom apartments. Princeton Grove features a resort style swimming pool, pickleball court, dog park, state of the art fitness center, Energy Star rated appliances, granite countertops, and for a limited time, Princeton Grove is offering one bedroom apartments for $799 and two bedrooms at $1099 without any application fees. Princeton Grove Apartments in Crestview, location, community, quality living, all starts at Princeton Grove.
The Florida Bright Futures Scholarship isn't just about covering tuition. It can help you pursue your dreams at any Florida State University, community college, or eligible trade school. Whether you want to become a teacher, study engineering, learn a skilled trade, or start your own business, Bright Futures can help you achieve your goals. The best part? It's funded by the Florida Lottery, so when people play, students win. Visit floridabrightfutures.gov to learn more about your options, check your eligibility, and start your application. Your bright future starts here.
This message is brought to you by the Florida Lottery and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings 5 till 9 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Well, who are you?
May the Schwartz be with you.
Good morning, 5:56 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. A Tennessee college professor is being reinstated after being previously fired for a social media post he made following the death of Charlie Kirk. After Kirk's death last September, the professor posted a headline quoting Charlie Kirk saying gun deaths in the U.S., were worth it to keep the Second Amendment. The teacher had been fired for that social media post. Pope Leo closed out the Catholic Church's Holy Year on Tuesday with a call for Christians to treat foreigners with kindness. The Holy Year usually happens every 25 years and is looked on as a time of peace and forgiveness. And seven U.S. soldiers were reportedly hurt in that recent attack on Venezuela. A Pentagon official told MS Now that seven soldiers had been injured in the operation to capture Nicolas Maduro and his wife. Five of those seven, though, the good news, have already recovered from those injuries.
All right, David, thank you so much for the update. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3. Interesting note, we didn't get to cover it yesterday, but the changes in the recommended list for vaccinations have changed. And I think what that's going to mean, obviously, is what gets required for kids or how that might cascade down into the requirements for kids for going to school. But also it might affect whether your vaccine is covered if you go to get it from your health insurance and, you know, sort of at what rate it's covered. So the list of ones that are kept is all the big names, like all the ones that you would think have to be on there because, you know, obviously we have to keep these vaccines. Measles, mumps, and rubella, so MMR. Diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis or whooping cough, the DTaP. Polio, chickenpox, human papillomavirus, HPV is an interesting one that they kept that because that's been a relatively new recommendation. They did reduce the number of shots recommended for the HPV from two or three down to one. HIB or Haemophilus influenza type B and PCV or pneumococcal conjugate vaccine. So those are all left on the list of recommended vaccines from the CDC. And then the ones that got removed from the list of recommendeds is flu, which is interesting in a year where we're having, you know, massive flu cases, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, meningococcal disease or meningitis, rotavirus, RSV, which is a respiratory, and COVID-19, which, you know, was a change made last year. So I don't have a really strong opinion about this one way or the other because all of the big, obvious, uncontroversial ones are left on the list. And the ones that are I've always kind of viewed a little bit more as optional or elective. Vaccines have been moved to the kind of elective status. The American Academy of Pediatrics, they say this is bad. They say they will continue to recommend all the ones that the Trump administration has now removed from the recommended list, and that there is no science behind the change in recommendation. And I will defer to their judgment on this. I think at this point in history, we're kind of sometimes forced to pick between the ideological crusaders like, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. or here in Florida, Joe Latipo, who are, you know, largely anti-vax or, you know, vax skeptics, and the American Academy of Pediatrics, who have historically been aligned with the CDC, but on stuff like this, you know, in the AMA. And I'll defer to their judgment. I just don't have a real strong opinion about it personally because a lot of those are, you know, relatively new ones. Do I think we'll have more cases of some of that stuff? I mean, yeah, that's the byproduct of not having vaccines recommended. Every hour.